Amanda, you mentioned earlier that you didn't always know that there were other transgender people out there. What was it like discovering that you weren't the only person like you in the world?
I remember reading about in an article, I can't remember where it came from, but I remember reading an article about Christine Jorgensen, who transitioned decades earlier, and it just fascinated me. So I went down to our library in Little Huntington and went to work searching for books or any information on the topic. Now, this was in the day before computers assisted anyone in searching for books, so it was a lot more time spent there going through card catalogs and going through shelves and not wanting to ask anybody there for help because I didn't want them to know. And I found in total 3 books on the shelf. One mentioned Christine Jorgensen as some kind of an exotic anomaly and something of a social enigma. There was nothing overtly negative nor anything overtly positive stated about her, and I was very disappointed at how little there actually was that mentioned or talked about her transition. Then I saw a book about a person who was born intersex, and the parents made a decision that this was going to be a little girl, but later on, after going through the puberty stages and not developing as a young woman would develop, being given hormones and working up through into early adult life, this person determined, hey, look, this is not who I am. I am male. And so ended up transitioning. But again, it wasn't really my story. It was someone else's. And so I still felt alone. The third book was a book by Jennifer Finney Boylan, I believe was the name. I'm just going off memory. I hope I'm not doing an injustice to her. And it discussed explicitly her experiences growing up male and transitioning. And that book really struck home. So at the time, there wasn't internet, but there were BBSs, bulletin board systems that people could dial in on the old internet or the old dial-up modems. So I dialed into the University of Iowa's database and went looking for information. And I met 2 people who were transgender. One lived in Pennsylvania and the other was a professor at Ohio State University. They neither one were out publicly, but they didn't mind putting a lot of information on the internet, or not the internet, but the BBS, about what they had learned as far as transitioning from male to female. And so that was kind of the start of my information, but it was very vague. It was very hard to find, and it took a lot of legwork to get information back then.
When did you decide to transition? Was there anything in your life that catalyzed that decision?
Originally, I decided to transition somewhere around 2002. But that attempt failed because I didn't have access to good information and I didn't have access to healthcare. And I was still trying to keep it quiet. I started self-medicating with hormones, ended up having thrombosis, blood clots. And so I had to cease that effort. And that went onto the shelf for many years. My final determination to transition came many years later during the holidays. The year had been very rough. I was in that fourth stage of the cycle. And I was becoming a vicious, mean, hateful person. I hated myself. I hated the world. So I started plotting for my suicide. This time it was different than any time before because I wanted to find a way to commit suicide and have it look like an accident. My intention, I'm sorry to say now, was to convince the insurance company that my death was an accident so that they would pay out my life insurance policy to my family. I figured that since I had put them through so much hell for so many years, they deserved to have something out of my death, if nothing more than some financial security to move forward. So I had a plan. At the time, I made a trip to Fort Wayne maybe once or twice a year. And I had a plan to drive on Highway 69 and crash my car into an upright support structure in the middle of the highway. This was years before they had the cement walls that divide one side of the highway and the other. And so I would have the ability to drift off the passing lane into the middle and just hit the concrete going as fast as I could, and hopefully they'd rule it as an accident. But in early December, I started questioning my plan. I knew that I had need to travel to Fort Wayne sometime the week between Christmas and New Year's, and I started to fear that perhaps my car would hit that concrete, the airbag would deploy, and somehow my life would be spared, but perhaps I'd become a paraplegic or worse, and I would no longer have the ability to make another attempt. If I failed on this one, I would not likely get another chance. So I thought, well, maybe I should just, overtly kill myself and be done with it anyhow. Around that time, we had a Christmas gathering at my parents' house. We usually gather on Christmas Eve. I don't know if that year it was on Christmas Eve or not. We had a nice dinner. My dad played the piano and we sang songs. He read from the Bible, what he calls the Christmas story. And then he decided to pull out some cassette tapes. He had found the cassette tapes earlier and wasn't really sure what was on them. He didn't really remember them. They'd been recorded so many years prior. And he got out his Panasonic tape recorder and inserted a cassette, and we were listening. And it was really rather fun reminiscing, listening to some of the things that we had on recording. Phone conversations with my great-grandmother and other people that were out of state at the time. Recordings from events happening in the house. One of the recordings that was on the tape involved my dad playing like he was a reporter, standing on the corner in downtown Huntington, stopping passersby, asking them what they were doing that day. So we're all standing in a line in the living room. My dad's holding a microphone and he's getting ready to record us one at a time. He says, "Hi, what's your name and what are you doing?" My sister gives her name, says she's off to buy a wedding dress. And he said, "A wedding dress? Who are you marrying?" And she said the name of a little boy down the street that she had a crush on. My dad asked, "Does he know this?" And she says, "Not yet." And so it was kind of cute. They had a little conversation. And so he moves on. My brother's standing there and he asked the same questions, essentially. I don't remember the responses, but next was me. And he asked, "What's your name and what are you doing today?" And I said, "My name's Tommy Susan." And he looked at me and he said, "Well, that's confusing. Tommy's a boy name and Susie's a girl name. Are you a boy or a girl?" And I said, "Well, I'm a girl." And he replied back that I was a boy. And I replied back that I was a girl. And he said I was a boy. And I sat there or stood there. And on this recording, I can hear myself arguing with my dad that I'm a girl and I'm tired of being called a boy. And my mom's in the background. Her voice can be heard saying, "Move on, just move on. This is recording." And so my dad quickly moved on and continued the recording. And when the recording was over, my dad hit the stop button that Christmas Eve celebration. He looked across the room at me and he said, "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you with that. I didn't know that that was even on there." And I said, don't worry about it. I think that's okay. I asked him, what's the date on that? Do you know when it was recorded? And he said, oh yeah, all my tapes are dated. So he looks at the case, examines it for the date, and he said, you would have just turned 3 years old. So although my earliest memories are at 4 years old, here was a recording that had been preserved of my three-year-old self telling me who I was. I went home that night and I thought about it a lot. I thought about it the next day and the next day. And I decided, instead of spending all of my energy and time trying to figure out how to die, I needed to spend my entire life and all my energy figuring out how to truly live an authentic life, the person I was ever since I was little, the person that my three-year-old self knew that I was. And so that week, my three-year-old self saved me, and I decided to transition.
What was it like coming out to your loved ones?
In a word, scary. I started with my wife. I told her shortly after the new year what my intentions were. I explained to her why. She had been there. She had heard the recording. She knew what I was talking about. She had seen the signs over the years, the things that she thought were odd but couldn't really explain and had decided to just push away instead of really processing what those things were. We sat there in a booth in a restaurant, not because I felt the need to have a public forum or venue, but because I needed a place to talk where the kids weren't going to hear what was being said. And she sat there very patiently taking it all. Finally, after maybe 30 or 40 minutes, she just sat there quietly and I sat there quietly and I said, please, please say something. I just need to hear something. And she said, well, it's not a deal breaker. And I said, what does that mean? Inside, I'm wondering, what does this mean? It's not a deal breaker. What implications are behind that phrase? So I asked her to expand and clarify. And she said, we were best friends before we got married and we'll always be best friends, but we're getting a divorce because I'm sure as hell not going to be married to a woman. And I fully expected that. I had all my things packed into the trunk of the car, expecting I was not going to be going home that night. And instead, I went home as her best friend, and I stayed the night, and we continued our discussions over the course of the next few weeks to sort out what it was going to look like and how it was going to happen. After we had sorted it out and we knew the course of action, it was time to tell the kids. Again, I was scared. Not all of my kids were adults at the time, and so I didn't know how they might handle it. Each one had a slightly different reaction. And it's really too much to explain at this point, but it was a good conversation. Next, I informed my brother, and I was given complete support. And I've always had complete support from my brother. And then finally, I told my parents, who at first were wildly accepting and so glad to finally figure out what had been the problem all these years that they had noticed but couldn't put a finger on. And they were happy. We had hugs and tears, and it was great. We explained to them that the marriage wasn't going to last, and they understood why. And for some months, that's the way it continued. Sometime later, my parents withdrew that acceptance, and it turned into entire rejection. Total rejection in every way, and that persisted for quite a while. But eventually, it changed. And we got together and we worked it out and we rebuilt the relationship and we never had a stronger relationship. To this day, my parents are some of the strongest allies and advocates I know.
How did coming out affect your professional life?
When I began my transition, I didn't inform my employer or any of the staff. I was a store manager and had a number of staff working under me. But about 9 months into my transition, things were developing in ways that could no longer be hidden entirely. And so I was approached by my owner to have a conversation upstairs in a meeting room, which was not uncommon. I didn't realize that it was going to be on the topic of what changes had been obviously taking place with me that I had not mentioned to anyone. At first, my employer was shocked, didn't understand what that was all about. And it definitely went against personal values that they held very dear, but they espoused support. I didn't realize at the time it was mere lip service. Behind my back, they had been having other conversations. And over the course of the next 3 months, although they said they would not reveal that to any other staff members, that would be my story to reveal, over the course of 3 months, the tension had grown quite a bit between those other associates and the store owner, who was not answering their questions. None of them came to me and asked me directly. So once again, the owner asked me if I would please inform the rest of the staff at what was going on, because the questions were coming now from staff members and even customers, and they were waiting for me to be the one to reveal it. And I did. It was tolerated by almost everyone, but there was really very little true support. There were a couple of people who were very vocal about not approving. One person had put in a 2-week notice to quit, and prior to the 2 weeks expiring, once they had been informed of my transition, they just quit on the spot because they wouldn't be working in a place with someone as defective as me. Customers were really all over the place on the issue. Not even all the customers knew. Some customers would come in the store and ask for assistance, and they might greet me as a male person working there. Some would approach me and greet me as a female working there. So the perception was already getting muddled to where some people were perceiving I was female, some were perceiving I was male. And the staff graciously agreed, for the most part, to play along whichever direction the customer went. If the customer acknowledged me as male, if they needed to address me, they would address me as male. And if they addressed me as female, they would respect that and address me as female if they had need to talk to me while I was helping the customer. Ultimately, though, I was fired specifically for the reason of transitioning. And it wasn't done quietly altogether. I was told that I was, quote, bad for business, end quote, and that what I was doing was immoral and disgraceful. And I was basically escorted out of the building. Then when I went to file for unemployment, it was denied because the employer reported that I had left my shift without notice, that I had quit and walked out. Later, they amended that charge to a breach of contract, that I had engaged in a breach of contract. And they knew that that was specific wording that would trigger an automatic denial of unemployment benefits, breach of contract. Fortunately, I had recorded the entire conversation, what they called an exit interview, my termination, and I was allowed to play it at the hearing in Indianapolis. When I did, and the recording very clearly demonstrated that I was being fired for transitioning, then my employment benefits or unemployment benefits were reinstated. However, no penalties were levied against the employer for perjury on those statements. And that was really disappointing.
What was your experience of transition like? What were some of the challenges that you faced?
There really are so many challenges. Challenges that I faced included healthcare, employment, housing, death threats, being denied access to public businesses, restrooms, discrimination directly in the judicial system, my appearance, my voice, my presentation. There are a lot of obstacles, and the obstacles that I faced aren't even all the obstacles that some other people I know have faced.
Amanda, that's so much for any single person to have faced, and you faced it with such courage. It really speaks to your perseverance and devotion to being your authentic self. So what has your life been like since then?
Overall, I'm perceived to be no different than any other tall cisgender woman. That privilege allows me to navigate day-to-day routines and social settings without the fear of direct harassment and violence. But the privilege is two-edged. As long as I'm not suspected of being trans, I can interact on the same level as cisgender women with all of the social expectations and inequities. And that's ultimately what I'm looking for, is just to live my life as a woman without anyone having the attention drawn to me. But when I'm asked about my experiences in life, I have to go into what a friend of mine calls edit mode. Edit mode is a survival tactic in day-to-day conversations. I can't say that I served in the military in a male-only specialty unit. I can't tell them that I'm a Freemason. I have to begin editing, modifying, and ambiguously wording my life experiences in a very limiting way. Essentially, I've gone from concealing my true identity to concealing my past, which is really still a part of my identity, whether I like it or not. And so once again, there are times when I have to hide to avoid discrimination and danger.
I can imagine how hard that must be. So when did you start doing advocacy work for the trans community?
Several months after I was fired from my job, and I was still looking for employment with all of the discrimination that was taking place in my employment process, I went to Huntington to eat at a local fast food restaurant while I was waiting for one of my children to get off work. I grabbed a sandwich and I sat down, and there was a young man that was going around the dining room, wiping down tables and cleaning chairs and even wiping down the chair legs. And I was really impressed. And I told him that he was doing such a good job. A short while later, he had gone to the back and he came back out front to the dining room. I was the only person in there at the time. And he said, "Your son works here, right?" I said, "Yes." "Well, he said that you might be a person that could help me." I said, "Well, what can I help you with?" And he proceeded to tell me that he was trans and that he was having difficulties finding support. He asked if it would be okay to discuss it with his parents and have me over for dinner to talk about resources and options and where they could find the support they needed. And so I went over to their house in an evening. We had a nice dinner. As we were enjoying dessert in the living room, we began a discussion, and we discovered that there was an intense need in Huntington for a support group. I set out with Dr. Aaron Bowman to begin a support group in Huntington. I drafted a proposal. We got it approved, and we began Huntington Area Transgender Support. We were surprised to find several people in town who had heard of the support group and joined. And it kind of started to snowball from there. A short time later, I was asked by the school system to come and help the staff and the faculty navigate a young student who was going to be transitioning. And they needed to have some information to guide them in making it a safe learning environment and making sure that they were doing what they needed to do to support this young student. From there, it moved to being invited to have discussions with the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce, which I thought was incredibly ironic that the man who I had had many interactions with, the president at that time, didn't recognize me when I came to do the presentation, asked me if I was familiar with Huntington or if I'd like to take a ride around Huntington after the presentation and have him explain to me a little bit about Huntington's history. And then later I went to speak at Parkview Health Systems, and bring about an awareness to them on some of the practices and policies that they are engaging in or were engaging in at the time that needed to have some improvements. So it just kind of kept working up from there. That's where the start came, though, was from this young man in a restaurant on a cold afternoon.
What an incredible moment of serendipity for you two to have found each other, and what a gift to the Huntington community. So since then, you've given numerous talks and led discussions covering a wide variety of trans-related issues. Can you tell us a bit about some of what those talks have accomplished?
Certainly. From the training events that I've been a part of, healthcare organizations, particularly in this case, Parkview Health System in Fort Wayne, changed policies regarding how they handled trans patients and even how they would handle something as simple as applications coming in from trans individuals. Some of those changes that were enacted happened that day. Even in the course of the time we were talking, somebody got up, went to their department, made some changes, came back and announced that they had made the changes before we even left. And that was amazing. Since that time, there have been a lot of those policies reversed. In fact, Parkview no longer will provide any sort of treatment for transgender individuals that are related to their transgender needs, their transitional needs. And that's very discouraging. This has been years now that they have refused that service. Some other things that have been accomplished are the help that has been given to the school systems to help them to better accommodate their students who are trans. There are various organizations that have been made aware of how internal policies and procedures are unwittingly harming trans people. I think that's a really important part of my work, is getting these institutions and organizations to recognize and amend policies and procedures. Now then, from discussions about my lived experiences, what's been accomplished, I can only hope that people will realize from these conversations about my experiences how marginalization, intolerance, bigotry, hatred, discrimination, how those can harm not only an individual, but the entire minority group that they belong to and all those who are close to them, particularly family. And in a larger context, the world, because the world itself is robbed of the potential that could have been developed had that person not been impeded by long-term exposure to systemic marginalization. That's my hope of what is accomplished in those conversations.
You've created a couple of support groups here in Fort Wayne. What are those groups, and if people would like to find information on them, where can they find it?
Yes, there are two groups in Fort Wayne. The first is Trans Support, which is a group for individuals identifying as transgender, non-binary, gender non-conforming, queer. And there's also a group, Transparent Support, which is a group that is for the parents of those who identify as transgender, non-binary, non-conforming, or queer. And information on both of those groups can be found by going to www.threeriverswell.com. The three is a number three, not spelled out. And I'm sure there can be a link posted somewhere.
We'll make sure to get that in the show notes.
Just go down three quarters away on that main page, click on support groups, and you'll find information about each of the groups. And you'll also have a link there to email us directly.
I, for one, am super excited to hear that you're working on creating an LGBTQ resource center in Fort Wayne. Could you tell us a bit about that project?
I would love to tell you about that project. This project was started when an individual who is the parent of a trans child relocated back to Fort Wayne and was looking for resources for their child and could find nothing at all, until they stumbled on a business card for the Transparent Support Group. So after having some discussions, we decided Fort Wayne is the second largest city in the state. There is really no excuse for us not to have an LGBTQ resource center that is comprehensive for the community And we started discussing what it would take to get there. I contacted several people, started generating some interest. We were having some conversations, and then lo and behold, this COVID-19 thing pops up. And next thing you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic and a lockdown, and absolutely nothing is happening. So this project has been put on hold temporarily. And as soon as we can get things moving again, we're going to continue those discussions, and the resources we need will be sought out. And we're going to be looking for people to help out with this endeavor. It's going to be a lot of volunteer work, but it's a project that is really worth putting some effort into. And I feel that we have plenty of people in Fort Wayne who are going to pick up on this and realize the value and the need, and we'll get it done.
It may seem like an obvious question, but why do you feel like Fort Wayne needs an LGBTQ resource center, and what is it hoping to accomplish?
I don't know that that should be an obvious question, but Fort Wayne needs this resource center so that people of the LGBTQ community have a single housing, a single resource center that they can go to for their needs, whether they're looking for healthcare, whether they're looking for information on housing, how to handle discrimination claims, and where to go for legal assistance, and so many other things. But more than just helping the LGBTQ community, its design is to help the Fort Wayne community, because it's not all about the LGBTQ community. There's a second piece to this. We are members of the larger community, and as such, the larger community has a need to understand our needs, and they have to have a place where they can go to learn. So what we're hoping to accomplish is to create this place where not only the LGBT community can come, that's a safe haven, that's a place to find support and help and information, but also as a place where the Fort Wayne community can also get help and information and resources about the LGBT community and the members of that community that they are involved with. Hopefully we can provide training for area businesses and organizations, and we can provide forums for a peaceful discussion on certain topics. We can discuss things that deal with legislation, and we can be a beacon to this entire area of Northeast Indiana. So that is the goal. That is what we're hoping to accomplish.
Is there anywhere online that people can follow and support this project as it develops?
There is no online presence at the moment. However, I do have an email address that they can certainly contact us if they're wanting to get involved and help, or they have questions about what may come in the future and how the picture is developing. So I'd like to include that as a link. That address will be NEILGBTQResourceCenter@gmail.com.
Despite the challenges presented by our current administration, it does seem like our culture as a whole is moving in a better and better direction around supporting the LGBTQ community. This is reflected in the next story Jenna Schock has to share. In addition to the work she does with transgender clients, Jenna has the unique perspective of discovering that her own daughter is transgender.
Jenna, could you tell us a bit about your family?
Sure. My house is an adventure. We have, my husband and I have a Brady Bunch of 7 kids ranging from 24 to 4.
Wow.
Never know who's going to be here at any point in time. So 3 of those are mine from a previous marriage. My oldest son, and then my middle daughter. She's a 20-year-old junior at IU. She identifies as bisexual. And my youngest daughter, who will be 17 in a month, and I'm still processing that, she is a trans female. It's really an interesting house. I will tell you, I grew up in the DC area, not here in Indiana. So we've always had politics in our blood, political activism, advocacy, being the person at the front of the protest march kind of family. That's just who we are. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, that just having the personality of being the one to fight for the underdog, it's always been that way. It's just that once I had children, and a significant percentage of my children were facing issues, of a variety of issues from their LGBTQ plus identities, then that became a heavy focus for where I put my mama bear energy.
They are so blessed to have you, Jenna.
I tell them that all the time.
So when did your youngest come out as transgender to you, and what was that like?
She came out officially about 4 years ago. And looking back on it, it was a little funny. I had kind of always been expecting her to tell me she was gay or bisexual. I didn't really see trans coming, but bottom line, I guess I didn't really care either. We were, at the time that she decided to tell me, we were in the middle of dealing with some kind of significant teenage behavioral issues with her at the time. And she told me, and it was like, okay, that's great. I love you. I support you. Now, can we get back to talking about the issue that's bothering me? it just wasn't a thing. We went out later that day and got her ears pierced, and you know, it just, things that made her feel good, but it was never a big deal. Acceptance has never been an issue in our household, but at the same time, it was like, I don't care who or what you identify as, you still need to get your chores and responsibilities done. I had a lot of people ask me over time if I felt grief or loss for the son that I had before I had my daughter. And, you know, while that would be completely normal and okay for someone to feel, I never really felt that. She had had so many issues with depression and anxiety, PTSD of her own, that I already felt like I was losing that son for a long time. So when she finally came out, everything made sense and it felt more like I was getting her back.
I'm so glad that she was able to reach the place in herself to come out to you and the family. It sounds like it was a really big healing stroke for all of you to know what was going on.
I think it was, but I would also point out how surprising it was to me that if you talk to her, she will tell you that she was afraid to do it. And that's in this house. That's in my house where, you know, we're militantly acceptant. You know, anything is pretty much okay as long as you're not hurting somebody. So the fact that, especially with her older sister being bisexual, her older sister was the president of the Gay Straight Alliance at her high school. Again, we're just activist kind of people. So the fact that she had any concerns with bringing that to me was really quite surprising.
It can be a hard thing for anybody to face their own identities and to make those, to come to those realizations.
Definitely, definitely.
Has having LGBTQ plus children influenced your work?
Yeah, I think it makes me extra observant for anybody who doesn't feel like they're accepted and loved for who they are. So, you know, I've seen the psychological damage that being rejected by parents or extended family or church families can cause. And knowing those high rates of suicide attempts, which are elevated throughout LGBTQ plus, but even higher in the trans community, I'm really focused on creating that safe, accepting place for my patients to know that they're loved and appreciated for everything that makes them who they are. Because sometimes you really just need that one person to tell you that. And, you know, it makes it enough that you can hold on until you get to a place where you can find your community and find the supportive people around you. So it definitely makes me acutely aware when those sorts of issues are present, the need to create that accepting spot.
As the parent of a transgender child in Northeast Indiana specifically, what has your experience been like? Have there been any specific challenges that stand out?
It's been a journey. Overall, I guess it's been a smoother one than I anticipated at the beginning, especially, like I said, having come from the DC area, there were concerns I had when we moved here before my kids came out. But in the early years of her transition, she was in public schools. So all the issues that you would expect to be a concern were to some extent. Bathroom issues, you know, they had a non-gender specific bathroom in the nurse's office and they let her use that. But that meant that she had to walk from all the way from the other side of the school and would occasionally be late for class. Again, more reasons to just kind of stick out from everybody else. Locker room issues, which one she'd use, pronoun and name issues, bullying. Most of those things did improve when we switched to online schooling at home, or at least became an issue that she didn't have to confront directly. But it came at the price of decreased socialization, and I would say that continues to be a struggle. We have found a community out there. Even here in Fort Wayne, there is one, and they aren't always loud and out in public, but they're there. And when you find them, it is a supportive community. But you know, we do definitely need to get to the place where her presence in school is the same as anybody else's presence in school. You know, it doesn't have to be an added thing to be worked through, or an added discussion to be had, or an added accommodation to be made. She's just Jackie, and she gets to be just Jackie.
What are some of the sources of support that you found? What resources has your family found to support you and your daughter through this transition?
So medically, Dr. Best and her team at Mosaic Health and Healing Arts in Goshen have been absolutely phenomenal. They've been a huge part of the process and ultimately led to me finishing my grad school clinicals and working there for a while, which really expanded my exposure to the trans community and that sort of focus in my work. But they helped us learn everything there that there was to know about puberty blockers, the hormone replacement therapy, really helping, you know, to prevent those permanent physical changes that she would have been facing very soon. And caused a significant increase in dysphoria because of it, and prevented development of even further dysphoria. So they never viewed her trans identity either as a diagnosis or a problem. They just accepted her for her. And that has meant a great deal to both of us. Here locally, there's a trans youth support group in Fort Wayne that's run by the Center for Nonviolence, which was a really great resource for her early on. So we're all the way on the other side of town, so she doesn't really get down there anymore. But at the early part of her transition process, they were a fantastic group for her to be able to be a part of, and certainly one that I have referred a number of other kids to.
What has being the parent of a transgender teen taught you?
Advocacy and restraint. I have learned how to advocate for her, but also when to step back and empower her to advocate for herself. I've learned the importance of acceptance in psychological development. Learned that even in Indiana, where I was concerned about the political environment, that there's a community here too. We've come so far since I was her age, but we have so far to go. She was very fortunate, like you said, and I tell them frequently, to have been born into the house that she was. But there are so many that just don't benefit from the love and acceptance that she has had. And we've got to get to a point where there is more more of that. That is the default, because that is the only way that we're going to be able to affect those suicide rates.
From your perspective, both as a mental health professional and as the parent of a transgender child, what advice do you have to people on how to support transgender members of our community?
Listen, support, be willing to learn and grow yourself, be willing to be wrong, love people no matter who they are. None of us can truly live in that perfect world we want until we make sure that everyone standing next to us has the same rights and privileges that some of us take for granted. Use preferred pronouns. You're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna mess it up. Just apologize, move forward, keep trying. Every failure you make is effort that is noted and appreciated. And learn, learn more about the trans community. We've had the amazing opportunity to be a part of the Human Library Project here in Fort Wayne, which is focused on having the opportunity to meet people locally that have lived completely different lives and experiences from you and learning about them. And it's been so rewarding to see Jackie sit at a table and talk to another person right across from her who's never met a trans person and perhaps had, questions or misperceptions prior to that. But once they've met her, they've seen her, they've talked to her, then those fears go away. She's not scary. She's an almost, outside of being a teenager. So she's got her moments, but she's not any scarier because she's trans. She's not any more different. She is a very normal teenage girl. And the more people get to see that, the more exposure people have, the more accepting everybody is in general. So get to know people.
Thank you so much for taking time to join us again today, Jenna, and share some more of your personal story. I'm so inspired by your family and so grateful that parents like you exist.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure.
I want to circle back to something that we talked about earlier. I'm curious. You're still married, aren't you?
Yes, I am. A couple of years into my transition, my wife and I, had been living together as friends, enjoying the security of our cohabitation and each other's company. We would go shopping together, do things together. Once in a while, we'd go out to eat, have a bite. And one evening, she asked me to go out to eat with her. She was going to treat me out for a meal. And I said, great, that's fine. Let's go. So we went back to a familiar place that had been kind of our resting point during all of those difficult discussions years before. And we're enjoying this dinner. Midway through, she reminded me of a conversation we had had in December regarding our divorce, which still had not gone through. She had determined that we would both pay for our own half of the divorce, and I had my part of that money in hand, but she was struggling to get the last of it for herself. So I had offered her in early December to pay for her half of the divorce and call it a Christmas gift from one friend to another. But she declined at the time. She said that she wasn't sure she wanted something like that to be a Christmas gift. So here we are, just after Christmas. Christmas had come and gone. I gave her another gift, and now we're sitting in the restaurant, and she's asking me if I remember this conversation. And I said, yes, of course. I said, now, if you want, I realize that time has already passed, but hey, we could call it a birthday gift or something else, and I could still do that for you. And she said, well, the thing is, over these last couple of years, I've come to see who Amanda is. And I think back over all the years of our marriage, at all the best times, and all the things I loved most about my husband, And I see that that is Amanda. And I just wonder inside if all this time that was Amanda trying to come out, but she couldn't. And now that you are Amanda and able to be Amanda all the time, I love being around Amanda. I love who Amanda is. And I looked at her and I said, well, what are you saying? And she said, I don't think I want the divorce. In fact, I want to marry Amanda. Will you marry me? And I was just flabbergasted. I didn't know where to go. I thought, I'm overwhelmed. I didn't see it happening this way. I was so sure that I was going to be divorced and probably remain single the rest of my life. And I said, well, can I think about it for a moment? And she agreed. But just a couple of weeks later, I realized how perfect it was and how right she was. I was no longer exhibiting any of those negative, harmful things that she had seen so many years from her husband, because all that was gone. And what we had in the last couple of years as a friendship was so amazing. We always loved our time together. We got along so well. And I realized that even I had just got done telling her that if I could dedicate a song to her, it would be a specific song. And in that song, it talks about her being a guiding light to me and the one who I really love. And I thought, I've even been saying this. So, of course, eventually I had to surrender to the invitation and I accepted her proposal. So now we're married again, only this time it's she and Amanda instead of the other person.
That may be one of the most romantic stories I've ever heard, and congratulations on navigating through one of the most difficult journeys a couple can go through and come out the other side stronger and more devoted to each other. That story is just absolutely moving.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Before we wrap up today, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners?
I do. The Black Lives Matter movement is really doing a great job of helping those of us who are not Black to understand the injustices and inequities that pervade our society. While we're learning and growing, some of these lessons we're learning on how to learn, how to listen, how to be an ally and anti-racist rather than merely non-racist. Those of us who are members of other marginalized minority groups need for you as I'm speaking to the listeners to apply those same principles of learning and listening to members of our groups, whether that group is LGB, trans, queer, indigenous peoples, Muslims, Jews, Latinx, or any other group that is suffering from long-term exposure to systemic minority stressors. And I would say be careful who you stand against. You just might find out one day that the group you marginalized includes someone who has been a longtime friend or someone you love. And how we behave today will shape our tomorrow. So let's work together toward a better tomorrow.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the show, Amanda. I am so grateful for the opportunity to share a window into your incredibly courageous journey.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a privilege and an honor.
Women Are Fort Wayne is sponsored by the Community Foundation of Greater Fort Wayne. For nearly 100 years, the Community Foundation of Greater Fort Wayne has connected people and resources to build a more vibrant community. Three ways the Community Foundation does this is through helping people make their charitable giving more impactful, connecting funding to effective nonprofits through grant making, and by providing leadership to address community needs and improve quality of life. To learn more, visit cfgfw.org today.
Have you enjoyed our content? Would you like us to make more? We hope you'll consider joining us on Patreon. We're offering three tiers of paid membership. Each tier comes with new ways to engage with the Women Are Fort Wayne community, including membership in a secret Facebook group, exclusive bonus content, and ways to help influence the direction we take Women Are Fort Wayne as our project grows. The money we make off of our Patreon will go straight into creating more and better content, and our mission to build bridges, break silos, share stories, and promote empathy. Want to learn more? Head on over to www.patreon.com/womenarefortwayne. We wanted to finish out this episode by featuring a musician from the LGBTQ community, and I'm super grateful to our editor, Adam Blackburn, for pointing me at Funa Yure, the darkwave-inspired duo of Mandy Kawa and Rob Parker. Mandy is herself a lesbian and was excited to be part of this episode. Funa Yure makes 80s-inspired music with their own twist. They started out as a one-song collaboration just for fun and followed that up by recording, mixing, and releasing their first record, Liminal, in 2019. This song, What Happens Next, was the second song they created together, and I absolutely love its darkwave influences. The song is about being in a tumultuous relationship where your communication, energy, and commitment are repeatedly not reciprocated. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram at Funa Yure Music, that's FunaYurei Music, and you can find their music on iTunes, Spotify, and Bandcamp. Thank you all so much for joining us today and listening to this incredibly moving episode. I hope that you enjoyed our guests' stories as much as I did, and I look forward to being back in a few weeks with our next exciting episode. This one will be focusing on the Women and Girls study that the Community Foundation has been working on. We're excited to share it with you. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, and feel free to drop us a line on social media. It would be great to hear from some of you. Take care.
Women Are Fort Wayne is a production of Monstrous Regiment Media and distributed by WBOI in Fort Wayne, Indiana. This episode was written and produced by Stephanie Gottesman and Tracy Henning Kohlberg, and edited by Adam Blackburn. Our episodes are recorded at Silver Birch Studio, with an extra thank you to sound engineer Steve Tyler and assistant engineer Harrison Tyler. We appreciate you subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at womenare.us or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. New episodes are released every 2 weeks. You can check out other content from WBOI on Facebook. Until next time, thanks for listening. From WBOI Fort Wayne.